The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
And it's a Friday. Oh, thank God. Welcome to it. I'm Nicole Sandler, coming to you live on a Friday afternoon on NicoleSandler.com, on the Progressive Voices Network, I don't think we're live on Netroots Radio or Air Progressive or FYI Nation, but, you know, they all carry the show. We're usually live on YouTube, but not today. No, my account was taken down, hopefully only temporarily. I got flagged for two copyright violations in the last week. One was from 2013, and a bit of news footage that I aired that I guess some guy who's a real jerk shot. I'm fighting it because it's fair use. I mean, it was a news event that I was covering and had to do with the Chicago teacher strike. So we'll see what happens with that. With the other one, it was a show from February of 2017, and apparently I played a few seconds from a song, but I don't know which one it was, or I have no idea what it was, because Universal Music Publishing Group not only blocked the video, they did a takedown complaint on me. So my entire channel is now I can't do anything there. So we are live on Facebook. Ooh, did we start on and we are on Periscope as well. And I'm hoping, if Twitter worked the way it's supposed to, yep. There is a link that went out on Twitter too. So well, one way or another, hopefully you got the show, because we got a lot to talk about today. It is a busy day. Coming up, a story that, frankly, with everything else going on in the world, is not getting enough attention, even though it's been going on for years. And that has to do with the U.S. Postal Service and the way the concerted assault on it. And it's not just Trump, although, you know, he's happy to be complicit and play along. This goes back to the Koch brothers, and actually the living Koch brother, Charles Koch. And to bring us up to date on what's going on and how dire the situation is, in the second half of the show, we'll speak with Lisa Graves, who's, if you're a longtime listener of the program, you know Lisa. She's been on with me many times. And she just wrote this brief that is stunning. It is posted up at inthepublicinterest.org. We'll go through all that. She's got a new research group that she heads up called, now I'm drawing a blank on it. True North Research. Anyway, so Lisa is the author of this brief. It's at inthepublicinterest.org, at truenorthresearch.org, and Lisa Graves will join us in about a half hour to talk about the billionaire behind the efforts to kill the U.S. Postal Service, and it is really important. But I got to tell you, there's something else going on that is really freaking me out. So, you know, I go through the news every morning. I record a 6-minute newscast that runs on the Progressive Voices Network throughout the day. And one of the stories that I had on What's News this morning, I found odd. And as the day has gone on, I found out more information about it, and it is terrifying. It's out of Portland, Oregon, where the Oregon Public Broadcasting Service is confirming reports that federal officers in camouflage, but without any identification or badges, that are driving around in unmarked cars, are grabbing protesters right off the streets, and I guess arresting them. I mean, they're not talking with local authorities Oregon Governor Kate Brown tweeted last night, quote, "I told Acting Secretary Wolf that the federal government should remove all federal officers from our streets. His response showed me he is on a mission to provoke confrontation for political purposes. He is putting both Oregonians and local law enforcement officers in harm's way." So I went looking to see if there's any video anywhere, and sure enough, there is. So let me share with you, and there was a lot of it, but I'm going to share with you one video that I saw that is, well, it's truly frightening. So here, it's from a website called Video Tree, and the headline or the text on the video says, unidentified forces in camouflage using unmarked vehicles to detain protesters in Portland. And then it says kidnap. And it certainly looks like a kidnapping. Here's some of what's on this video.
What are you doing? Use your words. What are you doing? Use your words. What are you doing?
I haven't done anything wrong.
Use your words. What is going on?
What is
Who
going
are
on?
You?
Why are you taking
NLG will get you out. What's your name?
What's your
Tell
name?
Us your name.
What's your name?
Okay, you're fine. We'll get you out.
Bro, what?
All right. We got you, friend.
We got you.
Oh, fuck.
NLG.
NLG, which is a legal
you
group.
You just violated their rights.
Oh. It's kidnapping people.
You just violated their rights.
Thanks for keeping the fucking...
And it shows these guys, these soldiers, they look like, climbing in these unmarked vehicles.
You're not kidnapping us and you're civilians kidnapping us.
Good question. And they're carrying long guns. They're in camouflage. They're setting off either tear gas or smoke bombs. This is really stunning. Oh, flashbangs. They're throwing at the protesters. So for those asking, yes, protests are still going on. And this is how our government is reacting to them. This is frightening. They're in camo, but I think we can still call them brown shirts. Oh my God, they're just firing at people on the streets. These are the secret police. Let me read to you while this plays a little bit from the Washington Post. Okay, this is Dateline this morning, 6:58 a.m. Eastern Time. When several men in green military fatigues and generic police patches sprang out of an unmarked gray minivan in front of Mark Pettibone in the early hours of Wednesday morning, his first instinct was to run. He didn't know whether the men were police or far-right extremists. Let me get rid of this video since it's ending. This is frightening. All right. He didn't know whether the men were police or far-right extremists who frequently don military-like outfits and harass left-leaning protesters in Portland, Oregon. The 29-year-old resident said he made it about a half a block before he realized there would be no escape. Then he sank to his knees, hands in the air. "I was terrified," Pettibone told the Washington Post. "It seemed like it was out of a horror sci-fi, like a Philip K. Dick novel. It was like being preyed upon." He was detained and searched. One man asked him if he had any weapons. He did not. They drove him to the federal courthouse and placed him in a holding cell. Two officers eventually returned to read his Miranda rights and ask if he would waive those rights to answer a few questions. He did not. And almost as suddenly as they grabbed him off the street, the men let him go. Pettibone said he still doesn't know who arrested him or whether what happened to him legally qualifies as an arrest. The federal officers who snatched him off the street as he was walking home from a peaceful protest did not tell him why he had been detained or provide him any record of an arrest, he told the Post. As far as he knows, he hasn't been charged with any crimes. His detention, which was first reported by Oregon Public Broadcasting, by the way, they are doing an amazing job. That's how we got this information in the first place. and videos of similar actions by federal officers driving around Portland in unmarked cars have raised alarm bells for many. You think? Legal scholars questioned whether the detentions pass constitutional muster. Orrin Kerr, professor at University of California, Berkeley Law School, told the Post, quote, arrests require probable cause that a federal crime had been committed. That is specific information indicating that the person likely committed a federal offense or a fair probability that the person committed a federal offense. If the agents are grabbing people because they may have been involved in protests, that's not probable cause. The article continues, federal officers from the U.S. Marshals Service and Department of Homeland Security have stormed Portland streets as part of Trump's promised strong response to ongoing protests. Local leaders expressed alarm at the news of Pettibone's detention and echoed calls for the feds to leave that have grown stronger since Marshals Service officers severely wounded a peaceful protester on Saturday. Yeah, somebody was shot in the head. Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon called it out in a tweet on Thursday that also called out acting DHS Secretary Chad Wolf. He wrote, now Trump and Chad Wolf are weaponizing the DHS as their own occupying army to provoke violence on the streets of my hometown because they think it plays well with right-wing media. Civil rights advocates suggested the Trump administration is testing the limits of its executive power. And sure enough, this guy, Chad Wolf, he's the acting DHS secretary because Trump doesn't have any permanent secretaries because they'd all have to go through, you know, Senate confirmation. And it's not like Mitch McConnell won't just rubber stamp his nominees. He's been doing it for almost 4 years, but oh, well. Anyway, this is acting DHS Secretary Chad Wolf when he was questioned about what the hell's going on in Portland.
I offered DHS support to help them locally address the situation that's going on in Portland. And their only response was, please pack up and go home. And that's just not going to happen on my watch. So we need to make sure that we're supporting our law enforcement officers here and making sure that they're going to continue to protect the federal courthouse here. That's what the DHS does. That's our mission. We're not going to abdicate our mission, our responsibilities. However, whatever the local leadership here is telling us, we're going to do our job. We're going to do it professionally, but we're not going to have these violent anarchists who show up about the same time every night for a series of hours and having that federal destruction to property. I was able to tour the courthouse here.
Oh, my God.
I saw the graffiti. I saw the broken windows, the broken doors.
Oh, no.
There's a facility right across the street from the courthouse that has 47 coats of paint on it. They have to paint the facility every night after it gets graffitied. So it's time that we take a stand. It's time that the local leaders here publicly condemn what the violent anarchists are doing. And only then, I think, will police, local police and federal police get this under control.
Wow. Just wow. Something has got to be done. I'm so scared that this is just a hint, a foreshadowing of what we're going to see come November 4th. Wow. I don't know where else to go with that. I was hoping to get a phone call from Jeet here over at The Nation magazine, who was also covering it. I haven't heard back from him yet, so I guess that's not going to happen today. Maybe Monday. This is something to keep your eyes on this weekend. I noticed that most of the corporate media is not covering this story. We need to stay on top of it because this is not okay. Just not okay. I mean, with everything else, all I can say is fuck 2020, right? You know, I like to start the show with something funny. Well, there's a song that went viral on the TikTok. Now, I'll be honest with you, I'm not a TikToker. Don't have it. Don't want it. But, you know, the kids are into the TikTok. And there's this group of three young women. I think they're all like 23 years old or so, but they've been singing together since they were like 14 years old. And they have a group, the three of them, called Avenue Beat. And these three young women in Avenue Beat put up a 90-second or thereabouts, I don't know what the limit is on TikTok, song that they posted and went to sleep and they woke up in the morning and it had like a few million hits on it. It went viral that fast. And so they said, what the hell, let's do a whole song. So let me just say, musically, you know, this isn't my jam. You know what my musical tastes are, and I hope you'll be here Monday for Monday Music when the awesome Dan Byrne will be our guest. But I thought I would share with you the full music video that these three girls, young women, put together. So because I share in the sentiment 100%. So here they are. They're called Avenue Beat. And this is Fuck 2020.
December 31st, I grabbed a beer, threw it up, said 2020 is my year, bitches. And I honestly thought that that was true, until I gave this motherfucker like a month or two. This is getting kind of ridiculous at this point. Yo, my cat died in a global pandemic, took over my life, and I put out some music that nobody liked. So I got really sad and bored at the same time, and that's why I'm like, low key, fuck 2020. Still sad, still got no money. I ain't got a watch up on my wrist. I just got some shit I gotta fix. Yo, low key, fuck 2020. Okay, that was a lie. The problems I got are honestly probably not that bad when I compare them to some shit y'all have. But I'm just stating the facts. This year is just whack. Emotionally, I am lonely and anxious and mad. And if you feel me on that, low key, fuck 2020. Still sad, still ain't got no money.
Everybody sing. Oh, yeah.
I don't know about everybody else, but I think that I am kind of done. Can we just get to 2021, please? Low key, fuck 2020.
Just like chill for like 2 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Low key, fuck 2020.
Yeah, low key, fuck 2020. Works for me. Kids on TikTok. Actually, they're not kids. They're young women. And I, like I said, I agree with the sentiment. Susan Schaefer in the Facebook Live chat, I guess that's what it is, wrote, here's what the ACLU said about Portland. Quote, what is happening now in Portland should concern everyone in the United States. Usually when we see people in unmarked cars forcibly grab someone off the street, we call it kidnapping. The actions of the militarized federal officers are flat out unconstitutional and will not go unanswered. Under the direction of the Trump administration, militarized federal agents have flaunted court orders protecting the rights of protesters, used sharpshooters to deliberately maim people, and deployed indiscriminate weapons of war, including sonic weapons and dangerous tear gas formulations. This is dangerous. And yes, everybody, call your members of Congress and tell them to get on top of this, because this, frankly, is
bullshit.
It's not okay. All right. Let's take a quick time out so Progressive Voices can get in a little bit of business, and we will come back on the other side. It's the Nicole Sandler Show, NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network. All right. I think they're in commercials. The other thing that I wanted to talk about was Mary Trump. Oh, my goodness. Did you see her? Last night she was, I guess she did her first interview with George Stephanopoulos on, that aired on Good Morning America. And then she did, Rachel Maddow last night. And frankly, this woman, I say when Joe Biden becomes president, he needs to present her with the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Now, I know it doesn't mean a whole lot anymore since Dump gave it to Rush Limbaugh. If anyone deserves it, it's her. In case you didn't see it, here's just a little bit of what she said. Here's Mary Trump's comments on Donald Trump's handling or mishandling of the coronavirus crisis.
I thought it was very important to address this because, of course, it's ongoing. Even at the time I was writing, in New York, we were past the worst of it, but it was clear that the rest of the country was not doing what it needed to do. I want people to understand what a failure of leadership this is. And the reason he's failing at it is because he's incapable of succeeding at it. It would have required taking responsibility, which would, in his mind, have meant admitting a mistake, which in his mind would be admitting weakness, which in my family was essentially punished with the death penalty.
Wow.
Symbolically or otherwise. What I think we need to grapple with now is why so many people are continuing to allow this. The fact that he is dividing us at the expense of people's lives. I mean, what, we're 140,000 Americans and counting are dead. And the vast majority of those people did not need to lose their lives if only Donald had said, listen to the scientists, wear a mask,
right,
stay home.
Right.
The fact that this is continuing, people are dying every day. There are states in this country that are absolutely out of control. And to curry favor with Donald, certain governors are continuing to ignore the science, and more people are getting sick and more people are going to die. It is utterly insane at this point. We need to wake up, and instead of taking it seriously, instead of standing aside and letting the experts take over, Donald is hawking black beans.
Black beans.
It would be absurd if it weren't so devastating.
It would be absurd if it weren't so devastating. I've said those words myself. By the way, if you're listening on the audio stream, listening on Progressive Voices, they're in commercials, you don't know, but I donned my face shield. I had to go. I'm going to take it off. I just wanted you to see how it looked. And you wear this with a face mask. I had to go today to get my semi-annual CAT scan because I'm coming up on my fourth anniversary of not only being diagnosed with lung cancer, but having surgery to rid myself of it. And I had to go in for the CAT scan today. And I'm telling you, I don't leave the house. But when I do, I'm decked out. This fucking moron in the White House can't even bring himself to do the right thing and tell people to wear a goddamn mask. It's just that frightening. And you're right. This would be almost comical if it weren't so deadly serious. I'm going to play you. Am I going to play? You know what? We should bring back the Progressive Voices people, shouldn't we? All right. So let's do this.
You're listening to The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
Okay, I think we're back from commercial break. So while you were gone, I played a clip from Mary Trump's interview on Rachel Maddow last night. I'm going to play one more. And this is really creepy because it's a story of a power trip that Donald played on his niece. And it shows him as the pathological liar that he is and worse. Here's how this little segment went. What? Or not.
I want to ask you about what I thought was the single weirdest thing in the book, which okay. Other reviewers and people who have read it and talked about it have not singled out. But this strikes me as so weird, I've literally woke up in the night thinking about it.
I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. I wake up a lot anyway.
Me too.
It's this anecdote where you are being introduced to not the president, but Donald Trump, your uncle at the time, is introducing you to Melania, his wife, who would go on to, of course, to become the first lady. It's on page 163. He introduces you to Mrs. Trump, and then he immediately tells Melania, in front of you, that you had a terrible drug problem that you have overcome, which is not true. And you correct him in the moment and say, I've never done drugs in my life. And then you say this. You say, he slid me a look and smiled. He was embellishing the story for effect, and he knew that I knew it. She was a total disaster, he said, smiling more broadly. So the reason this sticks with me is not just because he told a weird lie about you doing drugs when you didn't do drugs, but that he voiced that lie in front of you when he knew that it wasn't true and then seemed to sort of take pleasure in you being helpless before him lying about you.
Ew.
It's a very, psychologically, you're trained in clinical psychology, psychologically, that's a very weird portrait about what pleasure a person would get from lying, isn't it?
You think?
Yeah, it's also a power play. One, it fits into his favorite narrative, you know. The comeback is much more impressive if you're coming back from a really awful place in the gutter, like being a drug addict, instead of just like having a tough time in life. Just as with his comeback, you know, it was the bankruptcies and the horrible economy, and he was really down for the count. So, therefore, climbing the summit again was even more impressive, although, you know, it's questionable whether that actually happened. So there's that. It's sort of framing the narrative in a way he prefers. It also makes him the savior, because remember, that story is told in the context of, and then I gave her a job. So it's sort of taking responsibility in part for my reclamation, if you will. But more than that, it really is a power play.
You think?
The difference between that anecdote and other things I see happening is most of the time people don't correct him, which completely plays into his hand. Because then he can do it with impunity.
He does everything with impunity. All right. So there is a little bit of that interview with Rachel Maddow last night. I want to read this book. Not that, you know, I really have time and I don't have a copy of it yet. But that's one that I would read. And, yeah, it's probably already sold over a million copies. So good for her. She, again, deserves the Presidential Medal of Freedom. And that would just make Trump's blood boil. Couple of other quick things before we move on to Lisa Graves. In other news that happened today, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, back in the news again, and she announced that she had suffered a recurrence of the liver cancer that she already battled earlier this year and began chemotherapy in May. She said the chemotherapy is, quote, yielding positive results and shrank the lesions that were found on her liver in February. I hate hearing this. But you know, hey, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she takes a licking and keeps on ticking. She's the court's oldest member, its longest serving Democratic appointee, and has suffered several bouts of cancer in recent years, and acknowledged last year that she was receiving treatment for pancreatic cancer. Now, people don't survive pancreatic cancer, but she did. And as recently as January, she said publicly the doctors believed she was cancer-free. And, of course, now, I guess she's battling it again. Please, somebody wrap her in bubble wrap. What else happened? This, which is just is frightening. The Trump administration is likely to issue an executive order today seeking to ban undocumented immigrants from being counted in the census. That's not how it works. And the same way he couldn't put a fucking citizenship question on the census, you can't do this either. And here's a note from a lawyer friend of mine who said, since the 14th Amendment says that congressional appointment is to be based on counting the whole number of persons in each state, that idea doesn't seem to be constitutional. But then again, when has Donald Trump ever cared about whether it's constitutional or not? Let's see. The Secretary of Defense effectively banned Confederate flags on U.S. military bases, though he never once said the word Confederate. Okay. And again, we are, we're breaking records every single day, And, there's basically nothing, It's bad and getting worse. More records broken every day. The U.S. hit a single day record for infections on Thursday. In 10 states, including Florida, where I sit, the death toll was a new record. It just goes on and on. I looked at the Miami Herald this morning, and our hospitals in Miami-Dade County, the ICU departments are overfilled. Yes, here in the United States,
we're number one, damn it!
Yeah, aren't we lucky? All right, I'm going to get Lisa Graves on the line because we're going to change direction here. As I mentioned, she's got a it's not an article. It's a brief. It's a brief that Lisa Graves wrote in her position as the executive director of True North Research. She wrote this for In the Public Interest, where it is now posted, inthepublicinterest.org. I will post a link to it on my blog where I put the podcast of the day's show. And you can always find that every day at NicoleSandler.com/the date. So today's would be 7-17-20. It's in that format. Anyway, the title of this brief is The Billionaire Behind Efforts to Kill the U.S. Postal Service. Hey, Lisa Graves, you there?
I am. Thanks, Nicole. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, thank you so much for being here. And thank you for writing this. This, I knew you were working on important stuff, but this brief that you wrote, I think has been years in the making, and people need to understand this assault on the Postal Service and what the background and what's at stake here. And you answer all that. It's an 18-page brief that you can download, and I urge everyone to read it because you give the whole back the timeline. You know, a lot of us, Lisa, thought that the assault on the post office began during the Bush administration when the Postal Service was required to fund its, I guess, health and pension plan through for like 75 years in advance or something crazy like that. Now, you say it's 50, but either way, this is kind of crazy, right? This was not the beginning. This is one of the more recent developments in the assault on the U.S. Postal Service. Yes.
Yes, that's right. And so one of the things that we detail, that I detail in this report, is that this effort to privatize the Postal Service, to basically kill the public Postal Service, began nearly 50 years ago. And what you can tell from the research is that Charles Koch, who's one of the richest billionaires in the world, played a key role in that.
Yeah. So now Charles Koch is the Koch brother that's still alive, right? But did he do this alone? You have a timeline in this brief that goes back to, it starts in 1970 when, on the one hand, you have Congress passes Postal Reorganization Act and affirms the necessity of universal mail service as a public good. Good. On the other side of the timeline, you have Charles Koch starts supporting Reason magazine with Robert Poole at the helm. And then it jumps to 1976. Charles Koch becomes the biggest funder of the Libertarian Party. And on the other side, abolishing the U.S. Postal Service is added to the Libertarian Party platform. So Charles has been in on this from the beginning. His brother, who just died a year or two ago, then in 1980, ran for vice president on the Libertarian ticket. And so I guess that's when he got involved in this.
Well, that's right. One of the things that was really interesting to me that was disturbing is that before this period, privatization wasn't even really a term that was used. It wasn't a popular term. And in fact, in terms of the post office, it's still not a popular term. The Postal Service is the most popular brand in America. It's the most trusted institution. But starting back in 1971, Charles Koch was staking this man at the Reason magazine who became the expert on privatization in America. And Charles Koch staked him to expand that effort in 1978. And as Charles Koch was also the main funder of the Libertarian Party, it also targeted the Postal Service for abolition. This was, a fringe idea then. And in fact, it's a fringe idea now. The Postal Service has been supported by conservatives and progressives, by liberals, by Democrats, Republicans, for decades as a key institution. But this libertarian billionaire and the groups that he spawned and the people who he staked and pushed have been determined to privatize and take away this public institution, including through that 2006 act that you mentioned that requires the Postal Service to pay future health benefits decades into the future for potential retirees. And no other agency and no other corporation in America or the world is required to do that. That was was designed to kill the Postal Service, and it was designed and pushed by a guy who's a longtime ally of Charles Koch, this guy named James Miller, and he pushed that through with Susan Collins at the helm of that committee in Congress. She was there at the signing when it was signed into law by George W. Bush with James Miller right behind her. He was nominated again for that Postal Board of Governors, and Mitch McConnell backed him as well as Susan Collins and pushed him through. And so right now in Congress, there's a measure in the HEROES Act on the House to try to save the Postal Service. But Susan Collins hasn't moved to repeal this terrible law that she joined with this main Koch ally in pushing onto our Postal Service.
Lisa Graves, in between 2006 and George Bush's presidency and today, we had 8 years of a Democratic administration. And granted, it wasn't long enough, but 2 years when the Democrats ran everything. Why didn't they do something about this then?
There was a bill in 2009 that Senator Carper put forward that basically held off these payments until 2016. So initially in 2006, the Postal Service was basically every year had nearly $1 billion of revenue beyond its expenses, and it had more than $20 billion in savings. That money was all forced into this fund, along with payments totaling about $5 billion a year. So in 2009, the Democratic-controlled Congress put a hold on those payments until 2016. But then for the last 3.5 years, those payments have been put onto the books of the Postal Service, which pushes it into this, substantial deficit. So it still is continuing to hurt the Postal Service. It should have been repealed then. I'm sorry it was not repealed then.
Right. It's astounding that this exists. And I get it, with the Republicans in control, they're not willing to do anything to help the people. And I guess do all Republicans want to see the Postal Service killed off in favor of supporting FedEx and USPS?
Well, it's quite extraordinary because the fact is that in polling, Americans really value the Postal Service. Huge numbers, yeah. Transpartisan, bipartisan numbers, because the Postal Service provides a great service for a great value, and it serves everyone equally, and you can send mail anywhere across the country for the same amount. What that law in 2006 did was it barred the Postal Service from raising the rate for first-class mail beyond the cost of living, so basically about a penny a year. Mm-hmm. So that meant that the Postal Service could not actually add like 10 cents or something to a stamp or 25 cents to a stamp to make sure that it had the capacity to fully modernize, to make sure that it had, you know, the most current fleets in its mail, you know, postal trucks and semi-trucks and more. And so it really put a stranglehold on the Postal Service. It also barred the Postal Service from operating any other business activities like having banking services at the post office, which makes perfect sense to be able to do some banking when people are mailing packages or mailing letters. So this was nothing more than an effort by this man, James Miller, and his allies to force the privatization of the Postal Service, which we know was a goal of the George W. Bush administration. We know for certain it was a longstanding goal of Charles Koch himself, who's one of the most influential political funders and political machine operators in the country through his dark money machine. And so this is really a case of a very few tiny percentage of people, and really this billionaire who's had played a singular role, pushing on the American people something that most Americans totally disagree with. And in fact, Nicole, it would crush our economy to have the Postal Service go bankrupt. That's 500,000 employees. It's central to our chains of distribution. And to have it picked apart by predatory Wall Street vultures would be a disaster for our economy and would be a disaster for this service that's provided to all Americans. All Americans would not get that same service at a great rate and be treated equally.
Oh, exactly. Lisa Graves is with us. She's the executive director and founder of True North Research, which, Lisa authored this brief that is now published at inthepublicinterest.org. The fate of the Postal Service has been hanging really since that bill was signed in 2006. That forced them to fund this health pension fund all these years into the future. But now on top of that, you got Donald Trump, who I don't think he knows what's going on. Frankly, I don't think he pays attention to anything. All he wants to do is destroy, in this instance, Jeff Bezos and Amazon. And so he's called for huge increases in the price to ship packages through the Postal Service because he thinks that will get back at Amazon. I'm having a hard time sort of paraphrasing what he thinks because his mind is so warped. But do I have that sort of right?
You do. And in fact, the budget that the Trump administration submitted last year called for the privatization of the Postal Service basically sets out a path for privatization. I don't think Donald Trump read his budget in any detail. I doubt he even knows that. He's not a detail-oriented guy, as we know quite plainly. But what's happened is in the vacuum of leadership that he has presented, these sort of Koch ideas in all sorts of different parts of the government have really pushed through to the forefront. And so you have a situation where he has his own personal, private, you know, vindictive agenda against Jeff Bezos because of the Washington Post. And instead of actually dealing with the unfair tax rates for billionaires like Bezos and billionaires like Charles Koch, instead what Trump did was pass that ridiculous, outrageous tax cut 2 years ago that really dramatically, you know, added to our deficit in this country and also hampered our ability to fund the things we need. So he could have actually had a mechanism to address this, you know, vast empire that Bezos has built on Amazon. Instead, he wants to use the Postal Service as a cudgel, our Postal Service, the public Postal Service, to try to harm his enemy, which is outlandish and outrageous and unacceptable.
Everything about him is unacceptable. I mean, it's stunning. Just the way his mind operates, we got a little hint into that. I don't know if you heard the Mary Trump interview last night, but it's really disturbing. And I look at this, I look at how he rails against, you know, those of us who would like to see statues, memorials to Confederate heroes if that's the right word to use, taken down, that we're wrong because he wants to preserve history. It's about the history of the nation. Well, what about the post office? Didn't it begin, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but didn't it begin like with the Pony Express?
The Postal Service is actually in the United States Constitution. It's named expressly as a core component of our democracy, as an institution we need as Americans to help us get information. So it really would, you know, take out at its root one of the core institutions of the United States. And it was actually first led by Benjamin Franklin, one of the you know, founding fathers of this country. And yet Donald Trump appears to owe all of his allegiance to these traitorous men who fought the Union. While many of these Republican allies of Trump want to talk about how they're the party of Lincoln, since Lincoln created, President Lincoln created the Republican Party, and yet, on the other hand, they're determined to defend these statues of these men who who fought against our United States, who fought against President Lincoln. And those statues were erected decades after that war, during the time of Jim Crow, as symbols of Jim Crow racist policies. You know, where are the statues of our founding fathers in those cities? Where are the statues of the Republican leaders, the Republican generals in that war who won over their enemy, over the enemy of the United States of America, who sought to tear our nation asunder? So instead, what you see clearly from this president is an emphasis on those men who he calls heroes, and a desire to basically destroy core institutions of our democracy, including the U.S. Postal Service. I think that's wrong, personally.
Right. Well, so do I. And it's astounding. I mean, the hypocrisy is sickening. You know, everything about Donald Trump just makes my stomach turn. And the fact that he has no knowledge of history. He's never read the Constitution. If he did, he didn't understand it because he reads probably at a third grade level. And nothing is based on, you know, the norms and the mores of our history. It's all the voices in his demented head. So Lisa Graves, here we are today, 2020, you know, worst year in my memory. There are these efforts to still kill off the Postal Service at a time when Congress is supposedly trying to help us through this pandemic and financially. And there are more stimulus packages or relief packages on the way. And there are lots of people calling for the Postal Service to be helped in one, the HEROES Act. You mentioned HEROES. What's happening with the HEROES Act and how does that impact on the Postal Service?
The HEROES Act was passed by the United States House of Representatives about a month or so ago, and it would provide about $25 billion to help our Postal Service. The fact is that the Postal Service has put forward a statement to Congress that it really needs about $75 billion in both direct aid and in loans or loan guarantees to help it with this crisis. Because, in fact, the Postal Service, although it's delivering an enormous number of packages to people, medicines and other needed goods to our neighbors, the Postal Service, like every other agency and business in America, has really suffered in this coronavirus crisis because even though packages are up, regular mail delivery is down. Now, email, which is ubiquitous, cannot replace the core components of mail, things, physical items that are delivered to your house. And so, unfortunately, what's happened in this past week is that memos have leaked about the effort of Donald Trump's pick to head the Postal Service, the Postmaster General, a guy named Louis DeJoy, who has basically issued an edict that the postal workers should not be so concerned basically about delivering mail on time, that they're not going to get overtime to deliver people's packages, and they can't even park their vehicles in certain ways that help them maximize their deliveries. It's quite extraordinary, the level of micromanagement of this Trump guy, who's really nothing more than a Republican fundraiser, who's been given this post at the top of the Postal Service, really the worst guy at the worst time in the worst position to head our Postal Service. We actually need to have a Postmaster General who's going to be fighting to invigorate and defend this core service and institution our government. Instead, we have this you know, party hack, in my view, my personal view, who's been given this post with no experience about this sort of business and no experience in reality, about being committed to public institutions. I actually think the Board of Governors that approved him ought to be hounded out of office. It's a miscarriage of their fiduciary responsibility to let someone like that be in charge of our postal service. But in Congress, what you have is this House bill, the HEROES Act, that would give $25 billion, which would help prevent the Postal Service from going bankrupt in September. And then you have this Senate effort that includes Susan Collins, which is like $10 billion, like window dressing, to help the Postal Service out. Now, she's done nothing to repeal that Postal Act from 2006 that she presided over. So she's trying to have, I think, some political cover by being behind this $10 billion, just, you know, small amount in the grand scheme of things of what the Postal Service needs. Meanwhile, you know, she was in favor of the big bill by McConnell that had almost no strings attached for these huge businesses and nonprofits getting massive bailouts in that COVID bill. Whereas the Postal Service exists almost entirely based on people buying stamps.
Right.
And by, you know, the money people pay to send packages. It's not costing us tax dollars. And so in this instance, we have this public institution that's predominantly been self-sufficient other than this massive debt load that has been put around its neck. And now you have a time in which they're asking for help to help us, you know, keep this part of our economy thriving, mm-hmm. make sure that we have these chains of distribution working. And you have Republicans in Congress who are thwarting efforts to actually make sure our Postal Service does not go bankrupt and be picked apart by these Wall Street vultures.
It's frightening. The prospect is frightening. And Lisa, in the brief, you do make mention of the fact that John Oliver did a great segment on this a few weeks back that everyone should watch. And I know it's up on YouTube, so you should just Google on YouTube John Oliver Postal Service and you'll see it. Samantha Bee also did a thing a couple of weeks ago, and she came out with like her own special stamp and is encouraging people to buy stamps. Even if you don't need them, buy stamps now. Stockpile them to help support the post office. Is that a good idea?
I purchased some additional stamps because I want to help the Postal Service survive. But I really think beyond that, people really need to be calling their members of Congress. They need to be demanding their House member, their senators, that they support and save our Postal Service. They need to make sure the Postal Service has the money, not just to not go bankrupt in September, mm-hmm. but to actually do its job well and to have this effort that was passed in 2006 repealed. So I hope people will just light up the phone lines yes. of their senators and representatives and say, this is not acceptable. It doesn't matter whether you're Republican or Democratic. These are vital services for the American people, and the Postal Service should be able to charge a reasonable fee. Maybe that's 25 cents more per stamp. I don't know what the right amount is, but this one penny a year thing is not sufficient for the Postal Service to actually thrive, and we need it to thrive. And so I'm hoping that people will call their representatives and say, please save our Postal Service. And also, don't let some billionaire guy who pushed this fringe, ridiculous idea of privatizing it since like 1971. Mm-hmm. Don't let him win
right.
and destroy our Postal Service. That service protects us all and helps us all. The fact that Charles Koch doesn't need or want a Postal Service, who cares? He's just one guy. He happens to be one of the richest guys on the planet. But why should he get to have so much say through his minions and through his operatives in our future, in our lives, in our democracy? And so I hope people will reject this effort to kill the Postal Service and demand that Trump also start supporting our Postal Service. It's vital for our economy, and also it's important for our ballots. Many people rely on mailed-in ballots. The Postal Service needs to deliver those to people and deliver them back to the clerks on time so they can be counted. This is a fundamental assault on our democracy if we let these right-wingers kill our Postal Service, especially now at this point in our democracy in the middle of this pandemic.
Right. I mean, everything about it on every front, this is just, it's horrendous. And you say, how could they think about this? It's what they do. And as you said, this has been going on for a while. And Charles Koch has been evil for years. And this is not the only thing that you've uncovered about the Koch family. Lisa Graves, as you headed up an organization called the Center for Media and Democracy, which had, all the Koch files. You exposed the Kochs for what they are and all they've done. And this is just one more thing, although this is up there in the it'll go up in the annals of ugliness, I think. Yeah. And right now, especially when we need the Postal Service more than ever, because more and more Americans are going to need to vote by mail in order to save their lives. The whole thing is just astounding. But as everything is with this administration.
Well, that's right. And, you know, I have some of the files about Charles Cook, not all of them, although I seek to acquire as many as we can from archives across the country, because he really has had a really harmful effect on our American society and culture through the way he's used his fortune to try to distort our democracy, to remake it in his own image, and to push through his views to be binding on the rest of us. And this is just one more example. This privatization scheme is just so outrageous. One of the things that, so basically he staked this guy named Robert Poole, who was really one of the first leaders of Reason magazine, and helped him basically stake him so that he could in part write this book about privatization that was used by Maggie Thatcher as a blueprint for privatization in the UK. Anyway, the preface to this book includes another multimillionaire praising it and saying, you know, America has, you know, such, you know, sort of socialism because we have public schools and public pools and public parks. Yeah. How dare we have public schools and public pools and public parks and public tennis courts? That's the type of like antipathy that an extremist billionaire and an extremist millionaire who are his buddies can have. Most Americans think having great parks and great public schools, having, you know, local tennis courts and public pools that we can share in, you know, times when we're not in the middle of COVID. Mm-hmm. Those are great things that make our communities great. But to these narrow libertarian right-wing billionaires, that's anathema to their very narrow view that property must dominate, basically their property and their money has to dominate all politics and all decisions.
Yeah, no, you're spot on, Lisa Graves. Thank you for doing this work. This is so important, and everyone needs to read this brief. Again, you can go to inthepublicinterest.org and download it right from there. I'll have a link on my blog, as I said. Pass it around, share it, make sure everyone reads this, and then get on the phone and call your senators and your congressperson and tell them we need to save the Postal Service. And as you said, Lisa, this is not a partisan thing. This, I mean, if you want to talk about preserving American heritage and history, the United States Postal Service is, it's part of the fabric of what this country is about.
Well, that's right. And the other thing is the alternative is, again, this lie about the free market somehow knowing best.
Right.
You know, the free market doesn't do everything great. In fact, it does a lot of things poorly and some things it charges a huge amount for. So if you want to trade sending mail for under $1 for sending a FedEx package for like 10 to 15 bucks
or more,
I suppose that's your choice. That's because there's so much profit built into that for-profit private enterprise. We need a public service like the Postal Service that isn't operating for the profit of some CEO,
right,
or his stock options or her golden parachute, and isn't operating to please Wall Street investors versus actually provide a service for the rest of us at a reasonable price that's fair and is dependable like the Postal Service is. So, you know, I think the wise choice, the conservative choice, in fact, would be to support our Postal Service. The progressive choice would be to support our Postal Service.
Mm-hmm.
The right-wing, fringy libertarian idea or the vindictive Trumpy idea would be to kill the Postal Service. That would be destructive of a core American institution. I hope people will reject it no matter their party. It's a terrible idea. And it's a terrible idea for this country in the 21st century, and it's a terrible idea in the middle of a pandemic.
Absolutely. And we should be going in the other direction. You mentioned, you know, banking, and that's something that Bernie Sanders and progressives have been pushing for years. We should have a banking service as part of the post office. There are too many people who don't have a bank account, mostly because of the ridiculous fees that the for-profit banks charge people. That's why I use a credit union. But if it was available through the post office, I'd probably do that instead. We're going in the wrong direction here, and people need to stand up and fight for it like you do. Lisa Graves, I can't thank you enough for this and for all the work you do. You're just awesome.
Thanks, Nicole. Thank you for all your work to reach out to people every day. Thank you so much to your listeners, to everything you do, to not give up, to to keep fighting and keep fighting for our country and for our institutions, for our democracy. It's all really important. Don't give up. We can win if we fight together to defend our core notion of a great government that serves all of us equally.
From your mouth to everyone's ears. Lisa Graves, find her on Twitter at the Lisa Graves. And do check out True North Research. This was your first big project, huh? This is amazing.
It was one of my big projects. There's some more to come.
I'm sure there
are. Thanks, Nicole.
Will do. Thank you so much, Lisa. Great to talk to you. Have a great weekend and stay safe.
Thank you, too. Thanks.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. Lisa Graves, she just is so great. She's been at the highest levels of the Justice Department under a number of administrations. She's the real deal. She knows her shit. And I'm glad she's on our side. All right. We've reached the end of a week. So thank you for listening. Monday, we do Monday Music. In the second half hour, we've got a great artist named Dan Byrne coming up on Monday. We'll still do the news and everything in the first part, okay? Have a great weekend, everyone. Thanks for listening. Bye.